This Tridio production is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and made possible by you, our listener. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit tridio.com/donate. Hi, and welcome to a new episode of Let's Talk. And today we're going to talk pilgrimages. And joining me at first, because we're going to do this in two parts, is Deborah Shaben. Hi, Deborah.
Hi.
It's good to have you on the show. And you were the first person I thought of when I was planning on doing a show about pilgrimages, because we've been following you while you were walking the Camino. And
right,
you did it twice, right?
Yes, my first time in 2009, and my second time in 2011.
When did the idea of walking the Camino start with you? How did you ever, how did that get into your mind?
Well, this is the funny thing, because I think everybody remembers that moment where they're like, "Yes, I'm going to do this." So this is a Disney story. I was working at Walt Disney World. At the time, I was working at Disney's Animal Kingdom, and I was working undercover, so I was bored a lot of times.
Undercover, you were like disguised as a giraffe? Or?
Yeah, exactly. No, I was undercover security, so I was disguised as a tourist. And during the slower parts of the afternoon at Animal Kingdom, we would chit-chat with the regular security people that were standing there checking bags, which we're not supposed to do. But, we were bored. And so one of them was a lovely woman named Dora Santiago. And Dora and I definitely shared a Catholic bond, and definitely shared a religious adventurer bond in a sense. And one day she walks up to me at the front entrance of Animal Kingdom, and she said, "We should walk the Camino de Santiago." And I was like, "Yes, let's do it. What is it?" And so when she explained it, I'm like, "Yeah, let's do it." And that was in 2007. That was like summertime 2007. And I was like, at the time, I remember going, "Oh, okay, I work at Disney. I only have 3 weeks of vacation max, and that's if I store it all up and don't use it for any other travel. And that's not enough time to walk the whole thing, but I guess if I really need to, I will ask for permission to do like a couple weeks unpaid, and it's gonna take a lot of planning on my part." And then the weirdest thing happened in 2007 is that I stopped working full time at Disney and started teaching. But yeah, I still worked at Disney.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, well, that whole Camino thing went on the shelf. I'm like, can't afford it right now. Don't have time. I just started a new career. Like, I'm not going to be able to do it. But it turns out the career actually helped me. The teaching job actually helped me get to the Camino faster. Because then I could take the entire 6 weeks off at a time, unpaid.
Oh, school vacations. Yeah.
Right. The way my school was set up.
Uh-huh.
And so I ended up going in 2009, but I spent like all of 2008 saying, "Yeah, I'd like to do this, but it's, right now I just can't." So, but when it's time to go, it's time to go. What I found with, and I think a lot of people who walk the Camino, what they find is when it's time to go on the Camino, it happens very, very quickly. The funds come together, the plans come together. It just happens. And that's what happened at the beginning of 2009. I actually came into some money, and I was like, "Oh, I can walk the Camino now." And as soon as I did that, everything just fell exactly into place.
Wow.
But
that must also be scary, that all of a sudden everything is accelerating. Because kind of thinking in your mind, it would be nice to walk for I don't know how many weeks. But then actually it getting more specific, I'm speaking of experience, because I'm kind of hoping to walk the Camino next year. But the closer it gets, the more I'm like panicking, like, "Whoa, what did I actually commit to?"
I'm sorry, I didn't have that feeling.
Well, that's great. Congratulations.
I thought the days leading up to the Camino was like Advent, like an everlasting Christmas. Like,
really?
Every day was Christmas. It was this fantastic time of, because at the time I didn't have a backpack. I didn't have clothes. I didn't have, clothes to wear. I didn't have specific things that I wanted to walk the Camino. And so I started ordering them, and I started, shopping for them. And then it was like all of a sudden these Amazon packages would arrive, and it'd be like, "Oh, yay." My stuff is here. My plastic spoon is here, you know? So it really didn't, I never really had fear about it. I had some crazy moments that happened along the Camino that made me go, what did I sign up for? Sure. But leading up to it, nope, no fear.
Did you have the motivation to go walk it? Was it just the adventure, or did you have like religious reasons to walk it, or was it just something like, we'll see?
Yeah, well, and for me, you know, I I'm downplaying the religious aspect of it, because I, you know, I'm a practicing Catholic. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy the idea of sacred travel and being close to God and spending time to meditate. But I was like, let's go walk across Europe. This sounds like fun. And it was all the adventure of it. Uh-huh. You have a choice. You come across a choice. Do you want to do this alone, or do you want to do it with a group?
Yeah.
And a lot of people like, I can't walk it alone. And I was like, I'm going to try it alone. I want to test who I am as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be able to do, to make my own decisions and not make a decision with a group.
Yeah.
So it turned out to be a great decision, because I think it opens you up to meeting all sorts of people you probably wouldn't have met, or it wouldn't have been as lovely, I guess, to meet all the people from around the world that you meet, because you're in your own little group and it's not as open.
Yeah, the temptation is to stick with the people you already know.
Right,
and then you miss a lot of opportunities to meet other people.
Exactly.
How did you prepare? In terms of, I mean, this is a long walk.
Well, you know, I'd worked for Disney for so many years, so I was used to walking. I'd walked for 8 to 10 hours a day while I was working in the theme park. So, like, I can outwalk anybody.
That's true. And
so I was like, yeah, this will be fine. My first Camino, I did not prepare very much, which now looking back, I was like, wow, that was stupid on my part. Because if you're well aware, Florida is a very flat state.
Yeah.
And so I was living in Florida and I was like, there are no mountains here. There are no real hills to talk about. Mm-hmm. There's Space Mountain, but that doesn't count. And I was just like, okay, well, it couldn't be that bad. And then the first day, you know, you start in Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port, which is one of the traditional places to start the pilgrimage, and you walk up one of the highest elevations on the Camino day one.
Yeah.
And it's a straight like 45 degree angle.
Wow.
Like 3 kilometers straight up a mountain, and I was not, I mean, it nearly killed me. I was not prepared for that.
Oh boy.
It was terrible. And then I walked down the mountain, which is just as bad, the next day.
Yeah, because your knees are gonna suffer.
And I walked in and into the albergue, and I laid down on the bed, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I think I want to quit.
Oh no! Then, wow. Day two.
I'm like, I can't quit because I told everybody I was going.
Oh boy.
So it got gradually better. And then the second Camino, you know what I did? Mm-hmm. I got on a treadmill and I worked out 2 hours a night on the hill setting.
Yeah.
And so I felt like a rock star on the second Camino. I felt like a superhero.
Wow.
I
was
like,
and that actually, you can do that. You can just train on a treadmill with an inclination.
Yep.
And that will give you the necessary,
you don't have to do. Right. And here's the thing about the Camino. You walk at your own pace. So don't. It's not a race, although some people say it can turn out to be, especially in the summer, because there's so many people walking it and trying to get a bed at night. So you run to get to your bed.
Oh, geez.
But yeah, so I don't recommend Camino in summertime, but some people don't have a choice.
When did you walk?
And
it, by the way,
well, the first time it was April and May of 2009, and then October and November of 2011.
Wow, that's very different types of weather, I assume.
Yeah, and when I started in April, there was I wasn't supposed to go. If you've ever seen the movie The Way,
yes,
where the place where Martin Sheen's son, you know, Daniel, had died is actually, that was snow covered, because it was the top of the mountain. So,
yeah.
They were telling pilgrims, don't walk up there. Don't go up there. It's too dangerous. Uh-huh. But unless you're staying at a specific albergue, which I had already had reservations, they're like,
okay.
And then they charged the people who were running the albergue to for our safety. They're like, you need to make sure every single one of those pilgrims that was staying with you makes it to Roncesvalles, Spain the next day. So
that's what you did.
Yeah. No so way. The snow was up to my ankles in April.
No kidding.
Yeah. And it was, you know, muddy and snowy. And I was like, wow, this is not what I expected at all in April. So it was cold. It was colder than I thought it was going to be all the way up until May. And then in October, there were days that I thought I was going to have a heat stroke, which was weird.
Because then you get 36 degrees Celsius and like hot Spanish temperatures.
Right. And so it was really warm when I started out. There was one day that I swear I had a mini like heat exhaustion where it was just, it was blazingly hot. And then it cooled down and then it snowed.
No way.
Like November. Yeah, November it snowed.
Oh, jeez.
So I kind of like that. I like that temperature wise, but I'm not one for heat as much as I can stand cold. I just can't stand heat.
So you'd prefer like going earlier in the year.
Right.
And not definitely not in the summertime. Like a friend of mine has walked it in June and July. I was like, how can you do that? It's like 40 degrees and you're walking through the Meseta and it's like scorchingly hot. And then at night you don't sleep because of the heat.
Right, because they don't. It's not like these albergues have air conditioning. Most of them are old.
Of course. Here in Europe, we don't know what that is, air conditioning. It's something you see in the supermarket.
Yeah. Exactly. So, one of the things that happens is they throw you out at like 6 a.m. and you go and you start walking and you do as much as you can in the morning before it gets really hot.
Yeah.
So that's helpful.
How did it impact you walking the Camino? How did it change you?
Totally changed the way I think about anxiety and what's important. I was probably, I would call myself hypervigilant. Uh-huh. Like I was a hypervigilant person and I was very prone to angry, outbursts over silly stuff like, you know, traffic or standing in line, you know, normal stuff people get perturbed about.
Sure.
And so after I came back, I remember this specifically, I came back from the Camino and I went to work like a day later at Disney. Mm-hmm. And this woman was standing, you know, I was working at Pizza Planet, which is a fast food restaurant at the time. And this woman was screaming about this pizza. And I was like, why is she so upset about this? It's just pizza. <Yeah. laughs> And so I think I've carried some of that mentality. Like, why are we getting upset about this stuff? It's just traffic. It's just pizza. It's just you know, it really, in the grand scheme of things, is just one moment in our lives. And I think that's one of the big lessons I've learned is like, it's going to pass. It's just not that important to get yourself all in a tizzy about. So, you know, there are more things to get in a tizzy about than, you know, rush hour traffic or somebody cut you off or somebody ate your food or whatever. It's just, that's one thing. So I became less anxious about a lot of things and more open to knowing that everything has God's plan attached to it and that I should just trust it and trust that God will lead me safely through it. So that's another thing.
There's a lot you can't plan when you walk for so many weeks and in a country you don't know. Especially the first time, it's an experience. You don't know what it's going to do to you.
Right. And you know, it's just being open to God's providence and being open to whatever God brings to you and learning that life is not a race. It's a one step at a time. Like, you know, how do you climb a mountain? You climb it literally one step at a time. And there are times that I had to do it. I'm going up this really steep portion. I'm going to take 10 steps and then I'm going to give myself a chance to recover from that. So I would do that. It'd be like 10 steps and then I can rest for 30 seconds, 10 steps. And that literally is how do you solve a problem? You take it step by step.
Well, you've definitely encouraged me. I was getting a bit worried and I'm kind of, I don't like adventures where I'm not totally in control. yeah, I think I'll have to work on my trust, perhaps more than on my walking.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. That's a big part of it is knowing that you can physically do this. It's just believing that you can. And that everything will be okay.
Thank you so much for sharing your experiences with us in this first part of our Let's Talk episode about pilgrimages. Next up, we will be talking with Mountain Butorac, and he is an organizer of pilgrimages. He currently lives in Rome, and of course, we want to know everything about that beautiful city and how to go on pilgrimage there. So thank you so much, Deborah, and we will talk to you soon. You can find more of Deborah's links and information in the show notes on Tradio.com. Welcome back to this episode of Let's Talk About Pilgrimages. And I am talking now with Mountain Butorac, and you are calling in from Rome. Welcome on the show.
Thank you, Father.
How are you?
Great. Enjoying the weather here in Rome. It's fall, so it's beautiful.
Nice. How is fall in Rome? Is it like fall elsewhere in the world, or is it colder or warmer or rainier?
Well, for the Italians, it's like heavy coat weather as soon as it hits 70 degrees Fahrenheit outside. But I think it's pleasant. I mean, it's long sleeve weather for sure, but the leaves are starting to change. The sunsets are happening earlier. The sky is amazing. Just a great time.
Now, I've already introduced you as someone who is organizing pilgrimages. But my first question to you would be, how did you get into that business?
Well, my first time coming to Rome was in 1999 with a priest friend of mine, and I had never been out of the country before, and I just fell in love. I went back home and immediately quit the job I was working at the time. I was in the music industry and bought a one-way ticket to Rome, and I stayed over here till I ran out of money, and then I just started working odd jobs in tech until I could save enough money to travel. Then I started planning trips for friends and family. Then finally, I went to my parish priest, I guess this was 5 years after my first trip, and said, hey, can I put together a trip? And he said, sure. And it's been going ever since, almost 11 years now.
What was it about Rome that made you fall in love with that city?
I'm Catholic. I mean, this is where our history is. There's church on every corner. There's saints buried everywhere. The Pope is here. A lot of people like to come see the Pope, so that's what it was.
You're no longer alone in Rome. You live there with your family as well, right?
I do. My wife and two daughters live here, and we've been here for 3 years now.
Wow. Did you expect to stay there for so long, or?
No. Originally, we thought we'd give it a shot. We came over. It was going to be 3 months, and then it extended to a year, and then it was another year, and then another year. And so we're just going to see where it goes.
Now, Rome is a big city. And there's of course the historical center that everybody knows from the photos or because they visit it, but you also have the outskirts of Rome. So it kind of matters where you live. So let me ask you, without going into specifics, you don't have to tell me your address, but where do you live? What is your view if you look outside the window?
If I look outside the window, I'm on Borgo Pio, which a lot of people that have been to Rome know where that is. It's pretty much two streets over from where St. Peter's is. From my rooftop, I have a view of the dome. I can hear the bells ring. It's an amazing place to live. I mean, especially, St. Peter's is my home. That's pretty much my parish church. And to be so close, it's a true blessing.
That is incredible. And the moment that something happens in the Vatican, you can be there on the spot within 5 minutes, I suppose.
2 minutes. It takes me 2 minutes from my door to St. Peter's.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's amazing. You are organizing pilgrimage, not just to Rome, but also to other places in the world. Can you tell me a few other destinations that you travel to?
Yes, I've organized pilgrimages to France, Greece. Right now, I love trips to the Holy Land and to Jordan, which is considered the other Holy Land.
Oh, wow.
Those are my two favorite places to visit right now, in addition to Italy.
And where do you go in Greece?
Greece, we do Athens, Corinth, and then usually a cruise to some of the islands, kind of the footsteps of St. Paul.
Oh, nice.
We go to Ephesus, Turkey as well.
And France has a lot of places of pilgrimages as well.
Right. Of course, Lourdes is amazing, but even just around Paris, I mean, lots of day trips from Paris to see different saints.
Very cool. But let's talk about Rome, because that's where you live and that's where a lot of your pilgrims go to.
Right.
Why would people need to go on a pilgrimage to Rome?
That's, I mean, of course, it all started in the Holy Land, of course, but, you know, a lot of the apostles, they came to Rome. There's seven of them buried in Rome.
Seven?
That's really the seven, yes.
That many?
And that's,
I know Peter. I know Paul.
Right. Bartholomew is buried here. Who else? Yeah, I would have to think about it, actually. James the Less. There's Simon, Judas.
Wow.
Yeah, Philip, he's buried here as well. So
that's amazing.
Three of them are in St. Peter's. Paul, I mean, Paul as well is outside the walls, of course. So, yeah, seven apostles. So there's just so much of our Catholic Church history right here in Rome, and it's all walkable from the city center. So
yeah, that's a huge advantage of Rome. Mm-hmm. It's a relative. I mean, it's a big city, but once you're in the center of the city, it's actually very small, and you can walk from, you know, the Fountain of Trevi to the Vatican in, well, half an hour, if you're slow.
Yes,
perhaps even faster.
And so past 300 churches along the way.
One of the secret reasons that I invited you on this show is that we are planning our own community pilgrimage next year to Rome.
Finally.
And finally, because it's in the it's been in the works, I think ever since the first time I met you, you brought it up.
SQPN in Boston, I think, is when we started talking about it.
Yeah.
The first time, yeah.
And it's finally happening. So, of course, I'm very curious, and perhaps our listeners who are contemplating of going as well, they might want to know, so if we sign up for this, what does that look like? What are you going to show us?
Well, we would definitely include a few days in Assisi, kind of to unwind a little bit, get a good feel of the Italian culture before we hit the city, the big city of Rome.
Uh-huh.
Rome is overwhelming for a lot of people, so it is good to start easing into it. But in Rome, I mean, there's probably at least 30 churches we would see. There's a Eucharistic miracle that occurred here. There's a Marian apparition that occurred here that a lot of people don't know about. Of course, the four major basilicas, St. Mary Major, the cathedral, St. John Lateran. We would see relics of the Passion. There's part of Jesus's cross here, part of the crown of thorns, the stairs he went up when he was condemned to death. We'd have mass every day, amazing meals. We don't eat in hotels, very good meals around the city. I mean, it would just be a nonstop adventure.
So it's literally the best of both worlds. It's the best of this world in terms of it's one of the greatest cities on the planet, I think,
right,
with the greatest food and fantastic culture. And it has the best of the, like, the afterlife, the things that remind us of the world, you know, beyond this world that are represented in Rome. That's amazing. So is it, I mean, you've had many, many different groups that came to Rome. Is it necessary to have a certain, like, certain qualities? Do you have to be extremely pious? Do you have to know everything about faith to go on a pilgrimage?
Do you have to do
certain things to be on a pilgrimage? I mean, what makes a pilgrimage a pilgrimage?
A pilgrimage is for anybody. It's for us to just come out and explore our faith through travel. So, I mean, it doesn't matter where you are in your faith journey. I've had people that have fallen away from the church. They come on a pilgrimage. Maybe they have a reversion back to the faith, or maybe they don't. Maybe there's just something that touches them while they're here, and later in life, you know, it'll affect them.
Mm-hmm.
I've had super pious people on pilgrimages, and, you know, even for them, there's places for them to grow in their faith. So a pilgrimage is for anyone.
And for sure. During a pilgrimage, it's not just religious activities, I suppose. Well, there's eating and there's...
Well, that can be a religious activity as well. I mean, Italian food is great.
That's true. It's almost divine or heavenly.
<Yes. laughs> No, of course, like I mentioned, there's a lot of churches that we see on pilgrimage, but there's, you know, secular sites as well. I mean, there's the Roman Forum, there's the Colosseum, the Trevi Fountain, there's the Pantheon, which is it's a Catholic church now, but originally it was the temple to pagan gods. So, I mean, there's so much to see that's not Catholic. It's just, it's Rome.
How can people best prepare for a pilgrimage if they want to come to Rome? Because it's my experience, having lived there for a while, that if you just walk around, you're going to miss like 99% of the things. So what would be a good way to kind of get ready for Rome?
It's good to read up on the city, and I don't have any recommended reading off the top of my head, but just to prepare for the history that you're going to see and the streets that you're going to be walking. I mean, some of these streets are thousands of years old.
Yeah.
Some of the walls that we'll see, some of the ancient walls of Rome, they're from the 6th century BC.
Mm-hmm.
So just to prepare yourself for what we're going to see. I mean, we have local guides that are going to show us around some of the ancient sites and bring everything to life, but there's also going to be time on your own where you're just going to go out and explore. So, you know, if you know that there's a saint that you have a particular devotion to, they might have a relic in Rome that you want to visit. So it's good to know that ahead of time.
That's a good point. Yeah, there might be special personal preferences, things you want to check out.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, what is your like number one destination in Rome?
My favorite thing in Rome would have to be Scala Santa. So those are the stairs that St. Helena, Constantine's mother, brought over from the Holy Land. Those are the ones that Jesus climbed when he was condemned to death. They led to the Pontius Pilate's palace. But she had them brought over to Rome. And so now there's 28 marble steps that the faithful go up on their knees. They're covered in wood. It can be a bit painful going up on your knees. But,
I imagine, yes.
You know, you kind of meditate on what Christ was going through when he went up those steps. And it kind of puts things into perspective. But that's a highlight for me, whether I have groups or not. But when I have groups, especially, because I like to do that on the last day usually,
right,
after everyone's had a chance to bond and get to know one another.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're doing this, you know, it's very prayerful, penitential thing, really, going up the stairs that Jesus climbed together.
It's in a separate building, right? It's close to one of the basilicas.
It's right across the street from St. John Lateran, the cathedral.
And so they made that building to house the stairs, basically.
Right, correct. Yeah.
Amazing. What's on top of the stairs?
There's a chapel up there. It's called the Holiest of Holies. It used to hold a bunch of relics, but those relics have been moved to churches around Rome.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Fascinating.
That's my favorite.
Fascinating. Now, of course, I want to know a little bit about the inside. You live near the Vatican, so you're an insider. You know all the kind of secret hallways and the meetings between the cardinals that nobody knows about. And just kidding. What is the most like inner place that you've ever been where you thought I will never ever be able to walk in there and go there?
I've been in the Apostolic Palace a few times.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's really cool. So as part of a tour of the museums, there's a special tour that you can get that cuts through one of the hallways of the Apostolic Palace and takes the elevator that the Pope uses to go up to the apartments.
No way, really? There's a papal elevator.
There's a papal elevator. And then you walk through the courtyard. I don't know if you recall when Benedict left the Vatican for the last time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the palace for the last time. And all the cardinals were standing out on a little piazza and he got into his car and drove to the helicopter. I walked through that courtyard. So that was that was a highlight for me. The Apostolic Palace. You can't really beat that.
Nice. And there are also gardens beyond, within the walls of the Vatican. Can people tour those, or did they restrict that recently? Or I read something about that.
You can still go back there. It's a guided tour, so you can't walk around by yourself. But
No,
you can go back there and you can see where Pope Benedict lives. So you pass right by the convent where he lives.
Nice.
And then you can also see where Pope Francis lives from the same Vatican garden tour.
Right.
And that's something you can book on the Vatican Museum's website. So
okay.
You know, it's official. And not that hard to do.
The Vatican museums are also, of course, a huge, very popular destination for many pilgrims and tourists.
Yes.
Which causes huge lines. I mean, sometimes I am in Rome and I see these people line up and they're as far as the middle of the St. Peter's Square, and they just...
It's terrible.
Oh, you have to stand in line for hours and hours and hours. Is that
right.
the only way to get in, or do they let in groups more easily? Or?
Well, so there's 30,000 people a day that go through the Vatican museums.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot of people. But what so many people don't realize is that you can book a reservation online and skip uh-huh. the line.
Oh, wow.
Again, on the official Vatican Museum's uh-huh. website. But tour groups as well can skip the line. I mean, I'm not going to have our group wait for 3 hours to get in. I don't think anyone would.
Or longer.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would sign up for another trip after that.
It's crazy. So a lot of the people that wait in line are just, they didn't do their homework. They didn't do any research.
Right. And they're some of the same people that show up on Sundays when the museums are closed. Mm-hmm. So always do your homework when you travel.
Tell me a little bit about the various kind of groups that you've shown around in Rome. Are they like old elderly people where are they from? What kind of people go to Rome?
From all over. So, you know, my first parish trip I had on that one, there were a few teenagers, and then there was a guy who was 86,
okay.
and everywhere in between. Mm-hmm. And then my very next pilgrimage was with a school, so that was all teens. I've done quite a few school groups. I just finished up my 103rd group pilgrimage.
Really?
So, yes. So I've had newborns on my trip, and I think the oldest person was like 92.
Amazing. So,
but usually, you know, they're somewhere in between, like 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. So,
it's my experience that you have to be able to walk when you go on a pilgrimage in Rome, because otherwise
Absolutely.
It gets really, really complicated if, you know,
right.
you can't walk.
We always use a bus to get around the city, a private coach.
Uh-huh.
But it being Rome, I mean, sometimes the closest it can park is a 15-minute walk from where you're going.
Yeah.
Just because of the way the ancient city is built.
I mean, oh, yeah.
You can't drive through Piazza Navona, so.
No. It's it's a very, I mean, traffic in Rome is crazy.
Right.
And it does get better, but it's still, yeah, it's almost impossible to navigate without walking at least a little bit. So that's.
And there's cobblestone too, so.
Yeah.
Got to prepare for that.
Oh, man, I remember that one day I went to the name, the old Roman road that leads you outside of the city.
The Appian Way.
Right. And mm-hmm. I thought that I could go there by bike. But that road basically is still the same road that was there like 2,000 years ago.
Right, so right.
It's incredibly bumpy, and there's no way to go there on a bike.
No.
It was very
hard enough to walk it.
It was a part of Rome that I'd never seen, though. It was very impressive because you have a lot of these kind of not like monuments or grave monuments or... Mm-hmm. It's not very touristy, at least not the time that I was there. It was very quiet. And isn't there the grave of St. Valentine also, one of these roads?
Well, his skull is in a church closer to Circus Maximus.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure where the rest of his body is in a different city.
Right.
But St. Sebastian at the start of the Appian Way.
Right.
He's out there near the catacombs.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Are there many catacombs? I know that there are catacombs underneath the St. Peter's Basilica.
Right.
Well, those are not really technically catacombs, right? That's just
that's a necropolis. It was more like an outdoor city of the dead.
Right.
But it's covered up now, so it's kind of compared to the catacombs. But the catacombs, they're mostly outside the walls of Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are miles long, seven or eight levels deep.
Really?
So there's quite a few of those, yes.
And that's where the, you know, the early Christians used to bury their dead, I suppose.
Right, and early popes were buried out there. Oh. Saint Cecilia was buried in the catacombs. I mean, she's been moved back into the city, uh-huh. but yeah.
And you can visit those too, or are those closed to the public?
No, they're open, so you can take guided tours of those. You can celebrate Mass down there.
Interesting.
It's a cool experience, and it's just being down there around all the... Most of the tombs are empty because they've mm-hmm. Moved the bodies out of there. But it's nice to be down there and know that these are people that, you know, the earliest Christians.
Yeah.
And you're surrounded by their tombs. So.
And it's weird. I remember doing that years and years ago, and the contrast with the noise in the streets and then just the modern day Rome. And then you, a few minutes later, you're literally in another era, another time. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. It made a huge impression on me.
And even the temperature, because it could be 100 degrees outside, and then in the catacombs, it's pretty chilly.
Yes, yes, indeed. So we got to wrap things up. But if there was one place in the world where you could go on a pilgrimage, but you've never been there before, what would be what's on your bucket list?
Well, I'd have to say more parts of the Middle East and places that we really can't be going right now, like places in Syria, Iran, Iraq.
Where it's too dangerous to go.
Where it's too dangerous. But just because, I mean, there's so much history there.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to Jordan just several months ago, you know, there's a place where you can stand and you can look out into Syria and you're right there. And just to know that there's so much more that we can't really get to.
Yeah.
So that's my bucket list. I don't know when it's going to get checked off, but those are some places I'd like to go for sure.
We probably still have to pray a lot so that peace returns in those areas.
Absolutely.
And it's tragic that those sacred places are no longer accessible to perhaps an entire generation.
Right, and being destroyed.
Yeah, that too. I mean, isn't ISIL destroying like all these remnants of early Christianity?
Yes.
And they're blowing things up completely. So it's probably irrecoverable.
Yeah, right.
It's crazy.
Gone.
Well, that's why we go to Rome. <'cause>
It's still here.
It's a bit safer, I think, than other places in the world. Mountain, where can people find out more about you? And if they want to do their own travel with you or they're just interested in what you do, where can they find you?
So my website, thecatholictraveler.com. Mm-hmm. I list all my pilgrimages and I list all my past pilgrimages. I have a blog linked to all my social networks. That's the place to find me.
And I'm following you on Facebook, which is a lot of fun because you will oftentimes post these little videos or when you're exploring a new part of Rome or like just the other day you had this fantastic sunset. And that was filmed from where you live, right?
Yes, it was from my apartment.
That is just crazy. I'm looking at that as like, why am I here? Why am I not there right now drinking a martini or something?
Anytime you're ready, Father. My roof is your roof.
Fantastic. Well, of course, for those of you, and I'm talking to the listeners now, that want to join us on that community pilgrimage, I would encourage you to subscribe to our newsletter. So go to tridio.com. And there is a menu entry there to subscribe to the newsletter because that's where you will get the announcements about when this is going to take place. It's going to be the fall, so it's going to be probably September around that time where we're still trying to find a good week for that. And and as soon as we have updates, we'll post it on the website as well. So I'm super excited about that. I'm happy that it's finally going to happen, and I'm very excited that it's with you, Mountain, because
I am too, Father.
The Catholic traveler, you know, who could be a better guide? All right. Have a great rest of the day in Rome. And
you too, Father.
Next time you see the Pope, say hi from us.
I'll tell him tomorrow.
Okay, very good.
All right, thank you.
Take care.